Hey guys, and welcome in to the Texas Rangers podcast, the unofficial podcast by Texas Rangers fans for Texas Rangers fans. Don't turn it off just yet. The sky is not falling. We're going to give you guys some reasons today to be optimistic and upbeat. I'm your host, Jeff. Let's go around the horn and meet the starting lineup today. Over at first base, probably the best first baseman the Rangers have had in quite some time, is Doug. Doug, what's up, man? How are you holding up after this past week of Rangers baseball?
Oh, I'm doing well. You know, it's Rangers baseball is kind of like a high school relationship. It sounds great, but it's never going to last.
The Rangers actually call me back more than my high school girlfriend did. So I don't know what that's like. On to second base, up the middle, the guy that's just diving all over the place trying to stop every ball for us is Blake. Blake, you have the same hat on as Doug. How far in advance did you guys plan the outfits?
This happens relatively frequently. Like every 2 weeks, we'll wear the same shirt or the same hat. We work at the same place, sit next to each other, and our coworkers like, what is this?
You're the same person.
It's coordinated.
And over at third base, the hot corner who's just matadoring every ball hit at him is Brett. Brett, how you feeling today?
Feeling good. Blake and Doug's little wardrobe malfunction matchup here reminded me of one time in high school, Jeff, when you, me, and two of our other friends had the exact same shirt, and just by pure chance, we all happened to wear them on the same day to school and all saw each other at the same time and just agreed never to talk to each other the rest of the day because it was that embarrassing.
Yeah, that was one at a time, ladies. Get in line when that happened was basically the situation.
That may be why your high school girlfriend doesn't call you back, Jeff.
Yeah. No, I think her phone's broken, actually. That's what she said, and I'm going to buy it.
It's been broken for 11 years?
You know how these Apple stores... Anyway, let's get into the nitty-gritty from this last week. We always start off with our Rangers recap. We had two series to cover, one that's actually taking place right now against the Astros, but... We've done this the past two episodes, game by game. I don't think after the past week of Rangers baseball, people at home want to hear every single game, what happened in them. So we'll start off with the series against the Rays, which took place Monday through Wednesday. Rangers lost this series 2-1. The one game they did win was the Tuesday game, which was a come-from-behind victory. So, Doug, we'll just start with you. What from this series stood out? Maybe if you can give us a positive, something that, like, oh, okay, that was kind of cool to see. And then... we can all fight each other over the negatives because I feel like there are a few more of those. But what from the Tampa Bay series stood out to you?
Yeah, the Rangers leader's back. Adrian Beltre coming back, being activated off the DL. And so far has got a hit in every game. I know it's a real small sample size, but he has the highest batting average on our team. It's good to see him back in the lineup.
Blake, let's just do positives around the horn, and then we'll do the electrons and the negative energy. Blake, anything positive from the Tampa Bay series, or maybe even just the one game on Tuesday where we came from behind to win?
I like to come from behind win. I also thought Elvis had a little bit of pop in his swing with that, a 3-run run. I'm with Douglas. Having Adrian Beltre back is more than just having his bat in the lineup or the glove at third base. It's having his attitude in the clubhouse with what has apparently just looked like mental either fatigue or weakness in the team. So I'm glad to have him back and added some mental maturity and strength.
I got to say, that Elvis home run in the Tuesday night game was the best that I felt during a Rangers game, probably since our 10-game win streak. So maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but I was sitting alone in my room and I jumped up off my couch and scared a cat that wasn't actually in my apartment. Brett, 3-game series against the Rays. Obviously, the bullpen imploded a couple times, but we did have the nice win Tuesday. What did you take away from it?
Yeah, Blake kind of stole mine, but really just the play of Elvis Andrus. Over the past week and really over the whole year, he's on pace to crush his career season home run total. I think his previous career high was something like 7, and I want to say he's already past that.
Yeah.
Less than halfway through the season, so... hopefully that can continue and he can keep up that pop. It's sorely needed. Obviously with Beltre back, we have a little extra power, but it's kind of lacking from elsewhere in the lineup, so we need him to continue to do what he's doing.
Yeah, we're going to get to it a little bit later in the show when we talk about sort of Mike Iopoci, the hitting coach, and kind of what the approach that he's had with the team. And I think Elvis is one of the successes as far as taking a guy and getting a career year out of him. One thing I want to talk about real quick, Wednesday was the game where we lost 7-5 and Matt Busch actually blew his first save of the season. And then Sam Dyson said, oh, you want to see how to blow a game? Check this out. And actually proceeded to give up 2 home runs in the 3-run 10th. And we're going to talk about Dyson a little bit later and just kind of what it means and obviously the transaction that the team made with him later in the week. But what were your guys' thoughts the first time and the first sort of speed bump that Matt Busch has struggled so far this year? Obviously, he hasn't had a chance to close the game since then because we haven't been winning in the later innings. But Brett, we'll start with you. What were your thoughts on that? And are you concerned at all? I mean, it's just kind of part of the life with a closer in major leagues.
So I will actually take, well, not full credit because, I mean, part of the credit goes to Matt Busch himself, but I believe I sang his praises on the last podcast saying he hadn't given up an earned run since April 9th, and then he proceeded to immediately prove me wrong
less than three days later.
So that's the last time I'm going to praise anyone, except I literally just praised Elvis Andrews. So expect him to do something horribly stupid in the next few days.
Expect the 0 for 30 to start.
Yeah.
Blake, anything from that game? I know the bullpen, we can just go on and on about him, but there was 2 outs. I think Kevin Kiermaier just got a grooved fastball from him. I think it was just an aberration, a one-pitch mistake, and a guy who clubbed out a like 98-mile-an-hour fastball. I think I just sort of tipped my cap. I don't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I think he's had such a year that I'm not super concerned. He's almost like the opposite of Sam Dyson. Sam Dyson throws all of those all the time, and if he screws up, it's a good pitch. I think he just had a bad pitch. I think consistency from the rest of the season says that it's probably just a one-off deal.
Doug, we'll get into Dyson a little bit later, but again, real quick, your thoughts on Busch. Are you worried at all? It seems like the pod's not too much in that camp.
Yeah, right now, if I can pick anyone to come out of our bullpen at any point, it's Busch. And so I'm not going to be too worried about a home run that, I mean, it's a blown save, but it's Matt Busch. I'm fine with him.
Also,
I kind of feel like he's got some mental strength, too. Would we find him at a Goldie's, right?
Golden Corral.
Golden Corral.
Much more classy than a Goldie's. The types of, Blake, the types of arms you find at a Goldie's are like AA arms, okay? The big league. No, it's a pretty funny story. I think he literally auditioned for the Rangers in the parking lot at a Golden Corral. Which my first thought was, who's the idiot who agreed to just catch him in a park? Like, you want to sit down and have a guy throw 99 at you in a parking lot at a Golden Corral? Probably not the craziest thing the employees of Golden Corral saw that week. All right.
I'm curious how they picked the Golden Corral. Like, did they just happen to meet there for dinner? Like, they were courting him by taking him to a Golden Corral, and they were like, we can go throw outside? Because I feel like if you're courting a player, you should probably take him to a little bit nicer of an establishment than a Golden Corral. But
Brett, I challenge you to find more bang for your buck than a Golden Corral.
It's tough. I'll give you that.
It's not possible.
CC's maybe?
All right. Yeah, CC's probably. All right, on to the next series, which took place over the weekend, is actually ending right now against the Houston Astros. The dreaded divisional foe, Houston Astros, who seemingly will not lose to any team in the major leagues. They came into the series very hot, scoring 40 runs in a 3-game series against the Minnesota Twins, which that's not a typo, that actually happened, and proceeded to win the first 2 games of this series against the Rangers, and as we're recording this now, are winning Game 3. Doug, we'll start with you again. Darvish got the loss in Game 1, gave up that huge 3-run home run to Correa. And then Game 2 yesterday, Cashner, you know, had that bad inning again. He actually gutted out, I believe, five or six innings for us, and then LeCourc and the rest of the bullpen came in and actually held the fort down until we lost by 1 run after the bullpen gave up another run late. I believe it was Kelly who gave up a home run. So what were your thoughts on the Houston series so far? And I know we're still only a third of the way through the season, but is it sort of time to throw the towel in on the division and start looking at the wild card standings exclusively?
Yeah. So with the Houston series, I think frustrating is probably an easy way to sum it up. I feel like the Rangers aren't playing to their potential. But I mean, you also tip your hats off to the Astros. They're hitting, and as you said, you know, they just did 40 runs in 3 games or whatever, and they came out. They hit Darvish really well, that 3-run home run, and then the later half bullpen couldn't lock it down. So it's frustrating because I'm a Rangers fan. I want the Rangers to win, especially against the Astros. But hopefully this final game we can take. Regarding the division or wild card, right now we just have to focus on winning games. We can focus on the wild card because we'll hit the wild card before the division right now. I don't feel like we're completely out of it, but it's coming back from what we're 13 games back right now. We have a uphill battle that I believe we can climb.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue for me, and we're going to give you guys some hope later in the podcast, I promise, but isn't necessarily, I mean, looking at the way the Astros have played and the trajectory they're on with their roster, unless like some wave of a rash of injuries hits them, we're going to have to play like 700 ball the rest of the way to catch them. And I just don't see even getting the guys back that we're getting, that being so much of a realistic possibility. Blake, what are your thoughts? I know it's easy to be negative right now, especially with the team losing again. And obviously we want to beat the Astros just because they're our in-state rival and they're just awesome this year. But where's your head at right now after these first two games, the series?
Well, regarding the Astros, we'd have to play better than 700 ball because their win percentage is 714 right now. So we'd have to play Perfect. Even above that. And 714 is ridiculous. So I'm not saying that we should give up on the division. I'm not saying we should focus on the wild card. I agree with Douglas. We just need to focus on the next game and focus on getting one win and then take each day as it comes. But they are, I mean, they're 20-6 away from home. They've won 9 out of their last 10. They're having some kind of a season, but you've got to imagine they're going to cool off at some point. Was it last year or 2 years ago that they started super hot and ended ice cold and we came all the way back? And
yeah,
that was where nobody thought we had a shot. And we came back and we won the AL West. So you got to play the games, right? Baseball is crazy.
Yeah, and you look at some of the guys in their team, guys like Joe Musgrove, who's been incredible this year, but he's already approaching a season high in innings. I think the highest he ever threw was 2013 in the minor leagues, and that was 157 across two levels. So he's already almost at 80 innings for the year, so you have to think that that's a guy who's either going to hit a wall at some point or maybe just needs to be shut down by the team just as a precaution. But Brett, what are your thoughts? This Astros team right now seems like a runaway freight train. I would love to say we can stop them, but we're also going to need some help from some other teams. And then like Blake and Doug said, we just got to get our own house in order and start winning games. But where's your head at right now?
Yeah, I'm in pretty much full-on negative mode. I've seen a lot on Twitter and elsewhere about just like burn it down, fire Banny, fire JD, which I think is a little overboard. It's ridiculous. I mean, I think they've banked some pretty good equity over for Banny the past 2 years, what he's done with the team, and JD since forever with what he's been able to put together. So they deserve way more equity than that, but... and even focusing on the wild card, like you think like, yeah, well, the wild card, we're only 4 games back, but look at all the other teams that are within that 4-game period in the wild card. I mean, I think there's like 6 or 7 other teams ahead of us. So it only looks like 4 games, but there's so many teams there that, you can't really focus on anything outside of just, you know, the next game, the next series, and, putting together the team to win it, you know, one day at a time.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing about the wild card standings. I looked at it last night, and I was like, "Oh, that's not that bad." And then you looked at, "Oh, well, but we're actually like the fourth like worst record in the America." It's like every team you have to climb, but that's fine because when everybody's bunched up like that, you just win 4 or 5 in a row, and all of a sudden things are kind of flipped upside down. Yeah, for me, this Astros team is young. I mean, they've been building this since about 2010 when they went into full rebuild mode and had 3 straight top 3 picks in the draft. Thank goodness. Mark Appel didn't pan out, otherwise they'd also have an ace at the front of the rotation to go with all these guys. But just win the next game. I know it's super coach talk and super cliche, but that's what I always tell my fantasy baseball team. We can't win 7 games in a row today. Let's just try and beat the opponent that's in front of us. All right, guys, on to the fun stuff in our next segment, which is Rangers Real Talk. We're just going to go through a few hot-button topics, and this is the much-prolonged and aforementioned positivity that we're going to get to in the podcast. But first off, we have a question from a fellow Rangers fan out there. This is from Crew Kinzer @_CrewKinzer_, who wants to know, should we be worried about the crazy high strikeout rate? Is it a hitting coach problem or a hitter problem? And we've gone over this before. I actually think last podcast, Doug brought up an insane stat about how many times we struck out in that Red Sox series. So Doug, we'll go right to you. I know that the vogue thing in Major League Baseball now is no matter what the count is, swing like you don't care and try and hit the ball to the moon. And so we've seen inflated strikeout totals that we've never seen in the past. What are your thoughts on this? Because it's interesting, like Brett mentioned, a lot of people want to blow up the whole team and shoot all the whole coaching staff into the sun. Is this Mike Iapochi? Is this the hitters? Is this a combination of both? What do you think?
Yeah, first off, it's a good question. I'm honestly not surprised that we're kind of near the top of this. We know that Joey Gallo is going to strike out. He's striking out at 45% of his plate appearances. That's not surprising. And Napoli, again, he's not a surprising statistic. 36% of his at-bats are strikeouts. The ones that I'm more surprised about are the Delino DeShields and the Ryan Ruas. They're striking out at 33 and 40% respectively, and those are guys that I wouldn't anticipate striking out. Now, that doesn't mean that the rest of our team isn't striking out. We definitely have Odor striking out probably too often. But when you look up and down our lineup, I guess at least from watching games, I don't think it's a hitting coach problem. I don't think that Iaposi is to blame. I'm seeing really just players who are pushing themselves a little bit farther than they probably want to be and are struggling to play it. I know, DeShields and Rua are playing part-time. That might be a facet here. But I just – it's part of the Rangers team. When you have Joey Gallo who's hitting bombs, he's going to strike out a lot. The flip side to this is we're number six in the league in strikeouts, and the Astros are behind the Red Sox in the fewest strikeouts. So we definitely do have to right this ship a little bit if we want to get back and get some wins under our belt.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way this team is built, if you look at it on paper, there's a lot of guys that historically are just going to strike out a lot. And one name you didn't even mention, and it's kind of crazy that this total's as high as it's been because he's been on the disabled list the last 3 weeks, is Carlos Gomez, who's a guy who has historically struck out, I think, over 180 times a season since he's been a big league regular. So I don't know what you want, really, Mike Iaposi to do, change these guys' approaches and the way they've hit their whole lives. Seems kind of hard to do and almost counterproductive, especially at this high level of baseball. Blake, what do you think about the high strikeouts? I know there's games where it gets really frustrating because it just seems like everyone and their dog strikes out. We've had innings where, like, I think seven straight guys have been struck out in the game against Marco Estrada and the Blue Jays. What are your thoughts on this? Is it something that can be fixed, and how big of a problem is it?
Well, it definitely can be fixed in my perspective. The hitting coach, like it or not, is responsible for it. I don't know if it's just a hitting coach problem. I think there's so much of baseball is mental. But if you look at our batting averages, just our batting averages are pretty dismal in general. Part of that is a product of the strikeout issue that we're seeing this year. I'm really not sure what the cause is, but with so many strikeouts across the team, something is consistent with our team that isn't happening on other teams, whether that's the hitting coach or something else. One thing's to be sure, though, I have more hope in this team and its ability to get past the strikeout issue than I did with Josh Hamilton in 2011 on day games against lefties. So
he has blue eye sensitivity. What do you want from him? I mean, I just think that's too demanding, Blake. I can't forgive that. Because he's the only big league hitter to ever have blue eyes and play day games. Brett, we'll go to you. I think the thing for me is I could forgive the strikeouts if we were hitting the ball out of the ballpark more, like our batting averages were higher, but it just doesn't seem like that's there right now. What's your level of concern? And, I mean, this may be kind of a dumb question, but is this something that needs to be fixed for the team to right the ship, or are we just going to say, hey, maybe we just start to hit for a few more extra bases and hit the ball out of the ballpark a few more times and we can keep the strikeouts where they are?
No, I mean, I think it absolutely needs to be fixed if we're going to be turning it around. At this point, it's just kind of expected. Like, watching the game yesterday when they're talking about how the Astros are getting ready to set a franchise record for strikeouts in a game, and they're acting like this is like a great accomplishment by the Astros. And for me, I'm just like, well, that's just normal for us. Like, teams have been doing that all year. Like, the Red Sox struck us out 20 times. So I don't know what the fix is, really. I mean, you talked about the hitting coach, but then you have guys like Odor, he's just an aggressive hitter. And if you try and dial that back, I mean, yesterday what he did was completely unacceptable. I mean, he came up in three big spots and had three strikeouts. And that was, I mean, you could call that the difference in the game. But at the same time, you don't want to switch it up too much because he's an aggressive guy. And so if you have him pull back too much, then you're kind of getting out of how he is just as a hitter normally. So I don't know what the right answer is. I think, ultimately it kind of does fall on the hitting coach. I mean, that's his area of responsibility. So we'll see if he can get it turned around.
Yeah, to the point on Odor, I think his biggest asset is also his biggest liability. I don't know how you guys feel, but the bigger the spot is, I feel like he's more inclined to chase. Like, if he comes up in a big spot where the crowd is amped up and he knows that if he puts one in the seats, it could be a walk-off. Like, you could throw the ball in the dirt three straight times. I feel like he would get himself out. What are you guys' thoughts on that? It's just sort of his
approach. So I was shocked in the Blue Jays series when he hit that three-run homer in the top of the ninth, which was awesome. I mean, it got us within one run. We ended up losing the game either way. But I was shocked that he actually hit that because the whole series he'd been trying to blast it out of the park for obvious reasons. I mean, they're booing every time he comes up.
Right.
He hates it. So that, that was great to see, but maybe it, I wouldn't say set him back, but now it kind of got him on this, like, just got to keep doing that, keep trying to smash the ball, and it seems like what he's continuing to do, and obviously it's not working. I don't know what the answer is for him. I don't know if he just needs to sit for a couple days or what, but after his, like, first five games, it's just been horrible for his performance, which is disappointing. I mean, he clearly has the talent and the ability to be there, so hopefully he can get it turned around.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, on to our next hot topic. This one is probably something that is not a huge surprise to everybody, but Sam Dyson was shot into the sun this week, a.k.a. designated for assignment. Dyson, unfortunately, has given up more runs in 2017 than he did in all of 2016 in fewer than a fourth of the innings. Jose Leclerc was called back up now that his finger issue was fixed. So, twofold question here. Leclerc, how big of a key in the future of this bullpen is he? And then another question that we're probably going to get into, but hopefully not in the next few weeks on this podcast, is if things do continue to go south, what assets do we have specifically in this bullpen that we can look into trading, a.k.a. 31-year-old Matt Bush? So we'll go reverse around the horn here, Brett, and we'll start with you. Dyson is a guy who I think we really appreciated his efforts the last 2 years for this team, but for whatever reason this year, he could never get on track. What are your thoughts on his designation for assignment and kind of the future of the bullpen and sort of how some of the roles will shake out now?
Yeah, by the way, after we shot him into the sun, he immediately gave up four runs to Mercury, so I think it was probably the right choice.
They were sitting fastball.
Yeah. You had to do something with him, and you hate to see it. I know everyone's frustrated with it. You saw some stuff on Twitter and on, you know, news stories about it after he got the news that he was pretty much in tears because he was frustrated so much. So you got to feel bad for the guy, but from a business and a baseball standpoint, you also have to do something. You can't just keep going with the status quo with what he was doing. I know they tried to kind of shop him around. There's some rumors that a couple teams are interested in him. But ultimately they, you know, DFA'd him, and I'm fine with it. It's kind of frustrating. I'm sure no one more so than him, but it was great to see Leclerc get in the game the other day and pitch well, so hopefully he can kind of fill in and be effective.
Yeah, I think, to make a pun on your Mercury reference, nothing is more mercurial than the life of a big league reliever in the ups and downs season to season. Blake, this we'll go to you now. This was a guy who the last 2 years was one of the most dominant relievers in Major League Baseball, and as recent as 2.5 months ago in the World Baseball Classic, looked unhittable. Now we're sitting here talking about a guy that can't seem to get through a big league inning without a ball going into the seats, and he has probably pitched his last inning as a Texas Ranger unless somehow he comes back in a few years. What are your thoughts maybe like overall on the Sam Dyson experience the last couple years, and then I guess your thoughts on him leaving now?
I think the overall theme for me on Sam Dyson is it's really hard to be a closer in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
You look at Neftali Feliz. He was unhittable for a little while and then gone. It's really hard to be dominant as a closer year after year after year. And the talent that he showed in the last couple of years was really, really impressive. I think the other thing that it shows me is, you know, we're all fans. We all get really emotional about our teams. And when we win opening day, we're going 162-0. And when we lose opening day, we want to burn the house down. But we get emotional about this. We say, oh, man, I hate Sam Dyson. Sam Dyson, to Brett's point, is just as sad about this as anybody.
Yeah.
This is a guy he's got a life. This is his profession. You know, if I walked into work every day knowing that I was failing every single day, it would be hard to walk into work. So this is a kid that just, he needs a change of scenery probably, needs a change of pace, and hopefully he can pick it back up and can be a really, really successful closer in the league. But that's likely going to be with a different team.
I wasn't surprised to see, I got an alert on my phone that after he got DFA'd, both the Twins and the Rays had shown interest, because this is what you look for in a reclamation project. I think a guy who not that long ago was a dominant big league reliever. Doug, we'll go to you. We talked a little bit about how the bullpen looks now with Leclerc and then Matt Bush, and with his age, is he a guy we keep around or sort of look to ship if this thing goes south? Just kind of sum up in your mind your thoughts on the whole Sam Dyson situation. It's been so up and down even this year. And then how do things look going forward for you with the bullpen?
Yeah. Sam Dyson, as what we've already talked about, when he came over from Miami in 2015 and then all of last year, he had a great ERA. He was the guy, similar to Bush for us this year, he was the guy that, okay, we need to stop bleeding, put Dyson in.
Yeah.
And in WBC, spring training this year. He gave up one hit over both of those. It just happened. And to Blake's point, it probably is time for a change of scenery. Thankfully, you know, teams are, people might ask, why are teams interested in Sam Dyson right now? He has a 10-plus ERA. The reason they're interested in him is because of his history. He is a very effective ground ball pitcher, gets double play balls consistently, and can close out innings. Right now, he's just not doing it for the Rangers. So I'm excited to see how Dyson can still help this team via trade, whether that be prospect or cash. But yeah, I probably agree that he's probably thrown his last pitch as a Ranger for this year. Regarding our bullpen, our bullpen I'm getting more and more positive about, primarily because a lot of us, you know, we're pitchforking our bullpen because we're thinking of Hochschild and Anthony Bass and Dyson. Yeah. Those were really the three that kind of sunk us this year, especially early on. Now, Jeffries is still kind of in there. He's up and down. But right now, the seven or eight guys that we have out there, I feel pretty good with. Claudio, I feel good. Bush, Kella, Leclerc definitely coming back. He was pretty dominant initially before his DL stint. Regarding trading, I can't throw in the towel yet. I can't say, let's trade. As a Rangers fan, it always hurts me to say that the Rangers are sellers and that we're in a rebuilding year or whatever. So I just don't let myself get there yet. It might happen where in the next month or two I will, but really right now, I don't think we'll trade any of them just to rebuild. I really think we'll trade to improve our bullpen.
Blake.
Well, and to Brett's point last week, we don't really know what this team is yet. You know, we've had missing pieces that have just, I mean, Beltre's had a handful of at-bats. We could probably count them on both hands. We've had a few changes at pitching, people getting healthy with Leclerc coming back. So we don't really know what the team is. We know it's probably not the Astros. But other than that,
it's true.
It's hard to really say whether or not we should be trading, and is now even the right time to be trading. I don't think the answer to that is yes either.
Two things to Doug's point. First off, wow, Mike Housechild. I feel like that guy pitched for us 6 years ago. I completely forgot he was even on this team when we broke spring training. And he was awful. So, wow, totally forgot about that name. And Sam Dyson, and Blake, this is kind of your point. He's like the bad boy who every girl thinks, like, I can change him. I'll get him to ditch his leather jacket and his motorcycle, and he'll be the guy we can take home to mom and dad. So I'm not surprised at all that a team wants to take a chance on him, especially, like, if you're the Minnesota Twins or the Rays, who, especially the Twins right now, are kind of outperforming sort of every projection that they have, why not? I mean, maybe you can catch lightning in a bottle. And I'm going to make this prediction now. If Sam Dyson pitches against the Rangers later this year, we all know what's going to happen. He's going to completely dominate us. A three-up, three-down inning, probably nine straight Ks and strike everyone out. But to the bullpen, I'll just take the kind of the opposite approach that Doug did. I never want to sell, of course, but I do think that there is a path where we can sell off some assets this year and be right back in contention when April comes, or March or April comes around next year. And while I love Matt Bush and his four remaining years of team control, we need to remember that he is 31 years old because of all the off-the-field issues he had, and every inning he throws is just uncharted territory again for him, especially as he's a converted position player. Teams at the deadline are always looking for good relief talent. We've seen the Rangers the past few years trade an arm and a leg for a good relief pitcher, whether it was Mike Adams or Koji Uehara, or who we gave Chris Davis up for, some of these guys to sort of plug holes even for half a season. And with a guy like Bush, who's a proven closer in this league, has 4 years of control left, and has been dominant the year and a half plus we've had him, I think that, I mean, there's a lot to change. Obviously, guys like Rosh, Kastner, Lucroy, Gomez, are all guys who will be assets we can move, but he might be maybe the gem out of all those who would sort of hurt the least to trade as far as giving up a guy who's older, and we may have seen the best out of him. I hope not, but that could be the case. All right, on to something a little more positive than the bullpen, and that is to the DL stint and some guys that could be coming back. So first off, Cole Hamels, remember him? Yeah, he's that 1A ace that we have that hasn't pitched for us in a while. He threw a bullpen session today, Sunday, and the expectation is that he'll just need about another 4 to 6 weeks to rehab before joining the team, which is not as long as it sounds like, I promise. We'll just go rapid fire. Brett, how pumped are you to get Hamels back, and will there be a team left when he arrives if it's 4 to 6 weeks from now?
Yeah, that's a really good question for the second one. I'm obviously really excited to have him back. Talked about before, I think last week or maybe it was the first week, just about how, you know, who knows what we're going to get back because he's not exactly young. And he kind of showed towards the end of last season that he began to struggle a little bit. And I don't know if that was just kind of a rough patch or that's actually him kind of showing his age. But I was clearly proven wrong on Beltre. I think last week I said we need to be a little cautious about what we're going to expect from Beltre when he comes back. And he's been crushing it the past week. So hopefully Hamels will just continue the trend of proving me completely wrong from what I say on the podcast. So with that in mind, I'm going to say that Hamels is going to struggle when he comes back just so he can prove me wrong and everyone will be happy.
We might have a superpower here if we can just have you always be wrong. Plus, it's great for us. It's a win-win because we love when you're wrong, obviously. Blake, I'll throw it over to you, but I'll add another little nugget here that I just saw from the DL. So Carlos Gomez, who's also been apparently chomping at the bit to ramp up the extensiveness of his rehab by running the bases, with the rain this weekend in Dallas, which kind of screwed that up, but he's also looking to rejoin the team by the end of June. So of these two guys, what's your excitement level? What's the biggest impact? And then what can we do maybe like get them on a juice cleanse or something to get them back quicker? I'd love to hear your ideas as far as any medicinal improvements we can make.
Yeah, I'd say Shakeology or Plexus is a good option for each of them to get them back. No, the one of the things that I'm excited for over the next, I don't know, few months is getting Hamels back. I think you've seen the way that our four and five pitchers have pitched. And if we can add another strong guy in the rotation, I think that means a lot for our pitching group. Carlos Gomez, I'm not as excited for. I don't have a lot of confidence in him. I think part of that goes back to when he was playing for the Astros and he hit like 0-0-0 for a little while.
He came over
to our team and just started crushing for a little bit. But I don't have as much confidence in him as I do in Cole.
Doug, we'll throw it over to you. Maybe me selfishly, I just want Gomez to come back so we can showcase him for another team for like a month and a half and then trade him off. What are your thoughts on these two guys supposed to getting closer to a Rangers return?
Yeah, I think it's obvious. We all want Cole back. We need that ace paired with Darvish instead of throwing out maybe a Tyson Ross or another Austin Bibbins-Dirks. For Gomez, the reason I'm excited for him is because our alternative is Chris Hoying or Delino DeShields in center right now. And although we all love those two, I think defensively it's probably on par, and offensively I trust Gomez more. So being able to solidify our outfield with a Mazzara, Gomez, Chu, with some subs in there every once in a while, I feel much better about than a Hoying who has an error in center.
Yeah, he had a pretty brutal drop today. Gomez comes back. He's the type of guy who can put together four or five solid weeks. We know how dynamic of a player he is when he's going right, so hopefully we get him and Hamels back at a time where we can string together a few wins and make something out of the season. All right, on to our next hot topic. Over the last week, guys, this is an easy one. Who is the Rangers MVP? I'll go first and take the very low-hanging fruit here, and that's Elvis Andrus. I think we are seeing a true player development great story here with him. He's a guy who's always been an incredible fielder, always been very capable with the bat, but this year he's really just broken out. As Brett mentioned earlier, the power's there, and over the last week, he's hitting .556 with 10 ribbies, 5 doubles, had the big 3-run home run against the Rays. I've been blown away with him this season, and he's been one of the true success stories on a team that I think is going to be a guy who at the end of the year we're going to be like, wow, that was fun to watch. Doug, we'll go right back to you. Is he your MVP for the last week, or is there someone else you want to give some accolades to?
No, he has to be my MVP for the past week. If we were to ask this question the week previous on last week's podcast, I'd probably say Austin Bibbins-Dirks. Yeah. Just from a pitching perspective, he had been really good for us. But right now, Elvis is playing the way that we thought he would play 5 or 6 years ago. This is the Elvis that when we were like gung-ho, we said, yes, Elvis Andrus is going to be our shortstop. We thought that we'd be getting this kind of power, this batting average. Defensively, he's still doing pretty well. I'm really excited to say that Elvis would be my MVP for the past week.
Blake, who's your MVP for the last week? And it can't be Jason Jennings, Eddie Guardado, or Vicente Padilla. So I know I'm handcuffing you a little bit, but you have to pick someone. And it can be Elvis.
Let's
but
go with Arthur Rhodes.
Oh, my gosh.
Or Jorge Cantu.
No. Actually, Jorge Cantu had a big home run that year.
No, I love the way that Elvis is playing. It's really fun to watch him, especially because, like Douglas said, this is what we hoped for. You know, when he was coming up, when he was new within the organization, playing in the majors as a youngster, we thought we were seeing the future of our shortstop position. We knew we were, but we had hoped for a little bit more. And I love seeing his average is up at 305 now, as part of a lineup that isn't hitting very well. So it's nice to see him there. I know he's fun in the clubhouse. Everybody likes him, so he likely has some responsibility as far as leadership goes. So, yeah. But my MVP would actually go to JD, my main man, John Daniels, because he saved us from any more painful outings of Sam Dyson going out on the mound. He prevented Banny from putting him in, even in a high leverage situation. I think we can get some stuff back for him, and I do think that the best thing for Sam is to be on a different team and just try and get his head right.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with one out of the Elvis department and go with my main man John Daniels.
John Daniels is my MVP every week because he's given us the greatest decade ever in Rangers baseball. Brett, over to you. Who's your MVP? Are you gonna make it 3 out of 4 for Elvis, or do you have an obscure or I guess non-consensus pick here?
No, I think Elvis is the obvious answer, and it's great to see him batting well, and then obviously Beltre back there too. Just having them playing out there together is always great to see with how much fun they have with each other and just with the game. Also, fun fact with Elvis, he found a way in the busy season to get married on Thursday.
Yeah. Congrats to Elvis Andrus. Brett, were you invited to that, or is there still some bad blood between you two?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about it, and I was not officially invited. I tried to make my way into the wedding unsuccessfully, but don't worry, I'll find a way to crash the honeymoon as well.
That's good. I'm sure they'll be really glad to see you. All right, guys, our last Rangers hot topic. This happened just the other night. Mike Napoli actually left the game with a back injury. So real quick, just wanted to get into some implications that this could cause going forward. Obviously, Napoli has been struggling this year, but is a guy who we were expecting to be in the lineup every day, and especially mash lefties. Brett will reverse around the horn. What does this mean short term? Are you happy, sad? Obviously, we never want anyone to be hurt, but this could open up some at-bats for some other guys, especially with Beltre back now. Maybe it means Gallo's playing every day, or we get to see some extended Ryan Rua time out there.
Yeah, I think the big thing for that is just more playing time for Gallo. I mean, I don't think they were going to limit his playing time anyway, because he's a guy who just needs reps, and he can't just be sitting on the bench. So he was probably going to play anyway. I haven't been too down on Napoli as it seems that as much as you guys have. He's obviously not hitting for a very high average, but his power is still there. I mean, yeah. I don't remember how many home runs he has off the top of my head, but he's still crushing the ball when he does get a hold of it. So I think overall it's, I don't know if I want to say good when a player gets hurt, just like you're saying, but we could see those at-bats for some of the other people who need him more than Mike Napoli does.
Blake, your thoughts. Napoli, even when he's struggling, like Brett said, is still a presence in the lineup and has managed to get on base at a fairly decent clip. If he's out, let's say there is a DL stint. I know he wasn't put on the DL today, I don't believe. But if there is one, what do you think this means for some other guys in the team? And then when he comes back, does he have a role?
Well, this is the exact situation that you do want a Jorge Cantu, because then he could play first for you.
Ah.
But since we don't have Cantu on the team, I'd say this probably means that Ryan Rua is going to get more at-bats because Joey's probably going to be playing first. So that's probably good for Ryan. As far as Napoli goes, he is, it's kind of a catch-22 because with him in the lineup, you know he can put the ball over the fence, and he has a lot of maturity. He's been in the league for a long time. I think he's been in 8 of the last 10 World Series. Which is a pretty crazy thing to think about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's hitting 192, which I might be able to do that, you know? Well, actually, probably not. But
no.
You get my point. You know, 192 is bad. Even if I can't find many ways to rationalize that. But hopefully he gets off, his back gets healed, comes back and gives us a little bit of a pop.
I don't know what the over-under on Jorge Cantu references for the lifetime of this podcast was, but I think we've already hit it. And to keep the trend going of mentioning the Colorado Rockies, Jorge Cantu, Colorado Rocky, great. So to finish up this topic, Doug, we'll go to you real quick. Napoli, back injury. Don't know how serious it is. What are your hopes? And I know you're not a medical professional anymore after your license was revoked temporarily, but what are your thoughts on this injury and what it means for the team?
Yeah, with this injury, I agree that it probably just means Gallo will be able to get more familiar with first base. You know, Mike is currently on a one-year deal with a club option for a second. It'll be telling to see what this might do. Really, I think we have that club option because we don't have a first baseman. But it might show that Rua can be that or Gallo can be that, depending on what this all looks like. I do know that Mike got off to a really rough start of the season. The past 30 days, his average has kind of ticked up a little bit. He's hit 7 home runs, has got some walks in. So I know that he was starting to hit a little bit better, and this injury just happened to happen right now.
Yeah, to your point, I think the organization sees Ronald Guzman as the future at first base, but the last thing we want to do with him is rush him to the big leagues. And even though he's been hitting very well at AAA, I don't think we see him in Arlington at all this year. So that club option is definitely contingent on how Guzman continues to develop in the rest of this team. I left Napoli off my list of trade assets, even though I'm almost 100% sure he'll either be moved or in some capacity off this team in July if we're out of contention. I just see him as not a great defender at first base, and if we're starting to look towards next year, I think we need to find out what we have in Ryan Rua and Joey Gallo, and obviously need to keep continuing to get them at bat. So the Napoli injury for him is not coming at a good time, because now that Beltre's back, we're not going to take Gallo out of the lineup, and it seems to me like Rua the past few games has started to string together some good ABs. So we'll see what this means. I hope he didn't have to go on the DL, because he is still a weapon against left-handed pitching, and that beard is just one of the best in the big leagues right now. All right, guys, last thing before we end the pod, just proof that we can't predict baseball. Our good friend at Jimmy Mosley on Twitter had a great point that he shot at us before we started recording today. So on the same day this past week, Brian McCann stole a base against us. That's his first since 2013. And on that day, John Lester picked a base runner off first base for the first time since 2015, one of the rare times he's ever thrown over to first base after he got the well-documented yips in 2012. So we'll just go real quick. Doug, what are your thoughts on this? How crazy is baseball that these two things happened on the same night?
Well, one, the fact that these two things happened is just, yeah, just insane. The fact that it happened on the same night, I'd love to get a sabermetrician in here and tell us the probability of that happening, but I'll have to defer that. Maybe we can get them on next week.
Yeah, well, they did not return my messages, unfortunately. Blake, life is crazy. Baseball's crazier. What are your thoughts on this? And I don't know about you, but when Brian McCann stole that base, I got very upset because it actually wasn't even close.
It's up there with when, what, Big Poppy's last season, he stole a couple bases, which was wild. But still not as crazy as in, what, 2011, 2010, when Benji Molina hit for the cycle.
Yeah, that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Him, and he hit a triple standing up into third, which that's an inside the park home run for 98% of the rest of the league.
Some guys could have run around the bases twice on that.
For real. Greg Gentry is one of them. But, you know, in the words of the great Ron Washington, that's the way baseball go.
I do remember the Benji cycle had an incredible call by Josh Lewin where when Benji got into third base, he said, "Pigs have flown in Boston, Massachusetts."
Yes.
Brett, before we let the fans go, what are your thoughts on how crazy this past week was and these two things especially? And the Lester thing to me is super weird because I don't know how hard it is to throw to – I could throw to first base left-handed. I don't really get what his deal was with that, but it was a huge issue. So what were your thoughts on how nuts that was all happening the same night?
Yeah, I'll take credit for the Lester one just because he's on my fantasy baseball team. So naturally that's the Brett effect on that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a stat for pickoffs in fantasy baseball, but still, I think just somehow I had that effect on him.
There should be.
Also take credit for Andrew Cashner struggling because I did not pick him up for a spot start this time. In my defense, I tried, but since I dropped him after my last spot start, it was a waiver wire claim, so I wouldn't get him until today.
There we go.
I really had no possible way of doing so.
I hope you learned something from all this.
I did, yeah. I know. I've learned a very grave lesson.
Good.
The
Brett effect, we'll have to start hashtagging that on all of our tweets and see if people actually buy into it or not.
Yeah, we can get that going. We'll see if we can get it up to ranked. I did have, I noticed we, a Twitter question that we got. It was from Amber, as some of you may know. But I thought it was a good way to end the podcast just because it's more of a fun one. So basically, what is your favorite thing or best thing to eat while watching a Rangers game? I'll go ahead and start since it's kind of putting it on the spot for you guys. For me, it depends on if I'm at the stadium or not at the stadium. At the stadium, I think I'd like to go with the home park special. So just like the Rangers have the boomstick, if you're at a visiting team, see what they do that's unique, and I like to try that. It's something that you're only going to get at whatever park you're at, so might as well step out of your comfort zone and try that. Generally at home, I'll just go with keep it simple and go with hot dogs and then probably a beer. I don't know. Jeff, any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm a huge fan of sunflower seeds, but I don't consider that a meal for the purposes of this. Usually if I'm at home, I like to make a four-course Thanksgiving dinner. No, I'm kidding. Hot dogs are always a great one. Any type of fries, like garlic fries at the park, are really good. So I'll just go with that. I know it's low-hanging fruit, but it's actually the opposite of fruit, so because it's fried potatoes. Doug, how about you?
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm at the stadium, if I'm at the ballpark, and it's dollar hot dog night,
let's go.
Get out of my way. that's the place to be. At home, I just like, I'll have a water and I'll just plow through a pack of sunflower seeds. I don't eat a ton while I'm watching the game, but my seed stash is on point.
Blake, I know you can house some sunflower seeds from college. What's your favorite food to eat or snack while watching a Rangers game?
If I'm at home, I am housing those sunflower seeds. I also I'm a salty snack guy, so chips and salsa is right up the alley. If I've shown some ambition, actually gone to the store to get queso, you can bet I'm pounding that back too. I actually really respect Brett's choice for when he's at the ballpark, because there's so much risk in trying. I'm a traditionalist. There's so much risk in trying something new. The boomstick is delicious, but my traditionalism, every baseball game I go to, I've got a Coke, I've got nachos with extra jalapenos.
Let's go.
The traditional hot dog with ketchup and mustard. Sorry for those Chicagoans that hate the ketchup on the mic.
Yellow mustard, right? None of that brown mustard garbage?
Right, the real stuff.
Okay, good.
So this actually reminded me, Jeff, I don't know if you invented this game. I'm just going to assume that you did, so you can take credit for it. But we've played it a couple times in college. It's dangerous, so I don't know if I'd recommend it for everyone, but it was the 9-9-9 game.
Yeah.
Where through the course of a 9-inning baseball game, you have to eat 9 hot dogs and drink 9 beers, and you can't fall behind. So by the start of the second inning, you have to have finished your first beer and first hot dog. It's dangerous. I've seen people throw up, not from the beer. It's purely for just a large amount of hot dogs that you're eating in that time period. I've never made it more than like 4 innings because I just don't have the stomach for it. But I've seen people do it. I think our friend Derek did it. Eating cheese dogs, so that's hot dogs stuffed with cheese, somehow got 9 of them down in the course of a 3-hour game.
I mean, no one wins there. If you do it at home, don't drive and bring a wheelbarrow to escort yourself to the Uber after the game. On that, we will let you guys go. Thank you so much for checking us out. We are the unofficial Texas Rangers podcast. For Doug, Blake, and Brett, I'm Jeff. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, and please leave a review. Shoot us an email at therangerspodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We love to hear from you guys at RangersPod. And be sure to check out all of our previous episodes. If they're not on iTunes, they're in the link in our bio on Twitter at archive.org. When we talk to you guys next week, I have a feeling the Rangers will have won a few more games. So thank you for catching us again, and go Rangers.